Springbok Radio presents... Inspector Carr investigates.
I told you of a diabolically cunning attempt by the extremist wing, the outlawed Irish Republican Army, to blow up Buckingham Palace, in which a fine young man named Paul Chester was shot dead as he was taking part in London's annual Lord Mayor's procession. That investigation has little bearing on tonight's story, except for the fact that had there not been what was then referred to as the Irish problem, the special branch may not have come into being until many years later. It was formed as long ago as 1884, especially to counter the Irish Republican Army, or to give it its political label, the Sinn Féin's activities in London. In those days, political terrorism in Britain was unknown, except for the Fenians, and so this specially created organization was known as the Special Irish Branch. However, as the world political scene began to change, so it became necessary to drop the Irish, while the special branch's sphere was extended to include the protection of all VIPs and politicians and to concern itself with matters of national security. In fact, the special branch these days could be regarded as the secret intelligence department of the force. Why all this? Well, you've probably guessed by now that the murder we're going to dramatize tonight centered around a very important political personage. His name was Senator Barry Wiltshire. I've called my story Stung into Action. It was with a great deal of sympathy that I listened to Chief Inspector Davis's account. After all, Davis was the senior officer detailed to safeguard the American senator on his visit to London.
Imagine how I feel, Carr. I've had a strip torn off me by MI5, MI6, the Home Secretary, and even Sir William seems to think I fell down my job. But how was I to anticipate a thing like that?
That's bad luck. There's no question but that it was murder.
No, not now there isn't. Now they've had an autopsy. They haven't even been able to trace the poison. He thought he'd been stung by a wasp who warned him about going to the races.
But don't you think you ought to take me up on my offer of a coffee?
Coffee? At the moment, I feel like swallowing cyanide.
Oh, come on, Davis. It's not as bad as that. What was he doing in London anyway? I've seen no publicity.
Security, Carr. Security. Oh, fine sort of security it turned out to be. The senator, as you know, was chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee recently set up by Washington. He'd come over here to discuss the very tricky question of Britain's refusal to recognize the new Venezuelan government. While he was still in the air, we got word that there might be an attempt on his life. I was put in charge of his security. I was shaken rigid when he said he couldn't return to Washington without taking the opportunity of seeing a British derby.
Oh, come now, Chief Inspector. I respect the need for caution. My government has even detailed two top FBI men to accompany me, but this is going to ridiculous lengths. Personally, I discount such rumors. Nobody outside a very limited circle knows of my being here in London. Besides, my good friend General Butler's horse is running. I couldn't face George Butler if I returned to the States and said I didn't see his horse win, as it will. They tell me you can get odds of 10-1 on Manfred. If I were you, Davis, I would sport a few dollars, or should I say pounds. He'll win all right.
What could I do? I mean, as he himself said, we couldn't exactly keep him in perder.
How many men did you have at Epsom?
Two, besides myself and the two Yanks. Wherever he went, we went, even when he went to wash his hands. Well, now it's over to you.
But surely a political assassination of this sort isn't the province of the murder squad.
The Home Secretary thinks it is. Of course, it's a blow to my pride and the reputation of the special branch, but I see his point.
Which is?
Supposing whoever they are employed a hitman, someone not known to be politically active, and be done before, as you well know.
Indeed I do.
This bulky dossier contains a list of the possible political suspects, as well as members of the Mafia. Your ex-branch can supply you with an equally long list of non-political suspects.
Well, if the Home Secretary wants it and our Commissioner has agreed, let's start from the beginning. Now, I know all about the arrangements for his arrival, the house you took for him, the servants, who were security men and women. So let's go from the time when the race was actually being run. It was then that he was killed, wasn't it?
Yes. I brought you a plan of the steward's stand. I've marked the next where we were sitting, and it's just there. That's the VIP row. As you can see, I was on his right. Inspector Saunders was on his left, and two FBI men were behind him. And my men were just patrolling in front. Well, naturally, all the excitement as soon as the committee said they were off. All of us concentrated on the race. And when the horses came galloping around Tantnum Corner, the excitement was so intense we all stood up.
They're still very much filled with Sarah Jane slightly ahead of Lost Horizon. The killer, Reggie. Here comes Pinky Balfour. Hyacinth. Giant Soldier. Justinian and Manfred Boy. The American Manfred. The winner of the Belmont Stakes is on the scene. He's shot right up in front to challenge Sarah Jane. And now comes Lost Horizon. And there's only 5 furlongs to go. Stepping lightly is on the scene. But the favorite, Sarah Jane, is still ahead of Manfred. Here comes Pinky Balfour. Dainty Morsel has come right through with a devastating run. And there's only 4 furlongs to go. And Dainty Morsel is a little clear of Sarah Jane. Manfred, Lost Horizon. Sarah Jane is on the pressure. Manfred seems to be dead, so here comes Hyacinth. Hyacinth the Dainty Morsel. They won't get through now. They won't get these two. Hyacinth the Dainty Morsel, let me go. Manfred comes on the scene again.
Come on, Manfred, come on, Manfred.
And they
go
to finish it, folks. Come on, my money, I think Hyacinth is just it. Dainty Morsel.
Poor shucks. Oh, bad luck, Senator.
How about that? I've been bitten by a bee or a wasp or something.
He slapped the back of his neck. Just then the chairman of the club came up to remind us that tea would be served, and as the two of them spoke, the Senator collapsed at his feet. Well, the rest you know.
And no one noticed a thing?
Not a wretched thing.
You know, I recently investigated a murder of a diplomat, and actually he was a top policeman in Peru. He was killed with a dart.
No, nothing like that. I saw him put his hand on his neck. There was absolutely nothing there. It was only when he got him on the slab that we saw what looked like a minute spot of blood.
I take it that I've got a list of everyone who was in the VIP stand?
Well, as far as we know.
Yes, I see the point. With all eyes concentrating on the race, anyone could have sidled up. However, when the Senator slapped the back of his neck, that was the moment of attack, was it not?
Well, that goes without saying. Why do you ask?
Well, he couldn't have been killed by remote control. He had to physically jab the man's neck with a needle or some such.
Yes, I know, Carr. But then everyone was milling around, even the high and mighty stewards.
You say that as he slapped his neck, the chairman of the racing club came up?
Yes.
So he wasn't very far away, And what about the two FBI men?
Well, like everyone else, they were milling around, congratulating themselves. Apparently, they ignored the advice of the Senator and backed Hyacinth. You can't really blame them. Dozens of spectators were running down the steps from the special stand. All it needed was someone to stretch out his arm, jab, and no one would have noticed a thing.
Fair enough. How secure are your security men?
I'd stake my life on them.
When did you make arrangements for the Senator's trip to Epsom?
Today, about an hour before the race. I told you when we took over this house, and we keep it specially for top VIPs like Wiltshire. Surrounded by a high wall in the heart of Holland Park. Well, we just finished lunch, and I went into his room.
And come in. Ah, my worthy watchdog. Hero. The more I get to know you Britishers, the less I know you. And if that sounds a contradiction in terms, I meant it to be. I don't have to watch Manfred run on television after all. It seems that Lord Trumpton forgot today's date, the first Wednesday in June. The meeting's off. We're going to the Derby. He's telephoned the powers that be at Epsom and everything's laid on.
But I know.
I've now got the opportunity of seeing a British Derby. Your Home Secretary's arranged for a car. It should be here at any moment. He wants you to telephone.
Apparently, the chairman was quite put out. Privileged seats had been taken up weeks ago. But I must say that Major Merrick took it all in his stride eventually.
You say his name's Merrick?
You know, Carl, I was looking up the records. There hasn't been a murder at an Epsom Derby, or should I say death, rather, since that silly suffragette woman tried to disrupt the race and got trampled underfoot. Terrible business.
Well, I understand you say that you could vouch for everyone who was in the VIP stand.
Yes, I could. But as I told at least half a dozen reporters and members of the police force, when a race like this is run, everyone surges forward to get a better view of the horses. And you can't stop them from entering the special section, can you?
No, I suppose not. Did you see Senator Wiltshire slap the back of his neck?
Some intelligence waller, a chap who was with him, and he asked me that. You know, I can't say I did. I saw him move, as I turned round to remind them that tea was served in the special steward's room. But you see, in my opinion, it wasn't the American senator they were after. It was me.
You?
Yes. I am right in saying that the medical boys don't really know what killed Mr. Wiltshire.
Forgive me, Major, but they do. A virulent poison was injected into the body. Within seconds, he was dead, hemorrhage of the brain.
Yes, yes, I know that. But they don't know the weapon used. That poor chap wasn't meant to be poisoned. I was.
Major Nigel Merrick stood up to his full height as though he were being inspected by a senior officer and continued by saying,
"You know, chap, being chairman of a racing club and a member of the executive committee of the jockey club has its dangers, you know."
"Why do you say that?"
"Oh, come, come, Inspector. Surely you read the papers. You must have read that Maurice Sinclair has had his training license taken away from him, that Willie Howard and Ben Archer have been suspended for 12 months. That's a very severe sentence for two leading jockeys. And I was responsible. I uncovered the doping. Damn it all, the man was training for me at the time. One of the horses doped was my filly, Winsome Lass."
"But Major Merrick, if these three characters were warned off, they wouldn't be in the stand, would they?"
"No, they wouldn't. But Stephen Tucker would, and he's the evil genius behind most of the big gambling coups in the last year or two."
"Are you saying that Mr. Tucker murdered Wiltshire in mistake for you?"
"Yes, I am. If you don't mind my talking military jargon, let's take an appreciation of the situation, as they say in the service. Supposing he has the poison in his hand. Point of a needle, tip of a razor blade, I don't know. Everybody started to rush down the steps to watch the unsailing of Hyacinth. So did Tucker. I saw him at the foot of the steps. Now, he makes a quick movement to stab me in the back of the neck. Just then, I turn to invite the American senator to tea. And instead of stabbing me, poor Wiltshire gets it in the neck. In more senses than one." "Unconscious pun, that, wasn't it?"
"Well, Davies, what do you think of Major Merrick's theory?"
"Well, could be, I suppose. I mean, anything could have happened in the excitement. You know, he's got a point there. Those characters who doped his horse, they must have had the assistance of someone with the knowledge of drugs. Drugs? Therefore, poisons. Therefore..."
"Sorry, Davies, I can't buy it. I just visualize it in your mind. How can a would-be killer mistake the senator for Merrick?"
"But that's just it. He didn't. He rushes forward and somebody pushes his arm, and so the killer strikes at the senator instead of at the chairman of the club. Well, what do you think of that?"
"I don't think anything of it. For the poison to take effect, the needle, or whatever it was, had to be plunged, not scraped. No, I can't buy it."
"What are you going to buy?"
"That we won't find the culprit among Venezuelan dissidents."
"Then where are you going to start looking?"
"I've got out a list of suspects."
"From the file I gave you or from X branch?"
"Neither. Do you mind if I don't elaborate at this particular juncture? I may be barking up the wrong tree, and I'd rather set the wheels in motion before I give you any indication of what progress is being made."
"Now, wait a minute. Aren't you allowing interdepartmental rivalry to take precedent over the need to avenge this man's death? We're in on this too, you know."
"Of course you are. At this moment in time, I've nothing to tell you. Now, please believe me, if I see a glimmer of light at the end of what is still a very dark tunnel, then I'll say, okay, let's pool our knowledge. At this moment, there's nothing to pool, except a theory that I'd better try and justify it all."
"All right. If that's the way you want it, I suppose I'll be hearing from you."
"You will, at the earliest possible moment, I promise you."
"Well, you know where to reach me."
"Of course." "We have a very delicate mission, Ops. It has to be an internal job. I want X branch discreetly to get the background of everyone connected with the Senator's security."
"Right, sir."
"I'll send over a photostat copy, the names and addresses of the personnel. I want to know everything about them, the day they were born to the day they were members of the force, and particularly since they joined the special branch."
"Everyone, sir?"
"Yes, Ops, everyone."
"Sir, does that include..."
"Chief Inspector Davies, now stop asking questions and get on with it." The decision to probe into the private lives of fellow policemen was not an easy one to make. Yet everything I had gleaned so far pointed to a murder that had to be plotted and executed with the cooperation of someone connected with internal security. In the meantime, I had a word with Sir Bernard Halesbury, chief pathologist at the Home Office.
Don't you recollect the Potter murder? You remember this Edwin Potter was watching a fight at the National Sporting Club. When it was all over, he was found slumped forward with a needle stuck in his back. Oh, of course you do. You were in charge of the investigation, weren't you, Carr?
Yes, Sir Bernard, I was. But in that case, the murder weapon had to penetrate the man's jacket, shirt, and underwear.
Oh, yes, I'm not saying there's a great similarity, except to make the point that Potter was killed during all the excitement of the champion being knocked out. The unfortunate senator must have received his comeuppance just when they were galloping past the winning post.
But, Sir Bernard, having read the report of the autopsy, there was very little physical effort needed to poison the American senator.
That's true. The puncture mark was so minute, we could hardly see it with the naked eye. At first glance, it seemed no more than a freckle.
Well, Chief Inspector Davis and the chairman of the club feel that it may have been a case of mistaken identity, that the assailants may have meant to kill Major Medic.
Yes, I know. The Major has been on to the Home Secretary. I've often been his guest at the races. But I tell you this, Carr, if I knew that the Major had to pay for the hospitality and not the racing club itself, I'd decline the invitation.
Why do you say that?
Well, as you know, my cousin runs a string of horses. They are, or rather they were, under the care of Maurice Sinclair. My cousin was outvoted. He's got his ear closer to the turf than I. He believes that the membership of the Jockey Club's executive committee was a great mistake as far as Major Merrick was concerned. Personally, I don't think he'll survive the next election.
Do you know what branch of the service Major Merrick belonged to?
Yes, I do. He was one of those army boffins. Oh, wait a minute. Good heavens.
Well, what do you thought of, Sir Bernard?
Well, when he retired, he'd been in the chemical warfare unit for 5 years.
Did you get that, Ops?
Yep.
I want to know if there is any connection between Major Merrick and Senator Wilshire.
Very good, sir.
Oh, no, wait a minute, Ops. It can't be.
Sir?
According to Chief Inspector Davies, Senator Wilshire didn't arrive on the racecourse until just before the derby. The Major had no knowledge of his intended arrival until the Home Secretary telephoned. Now, chemical warfare or not, I think the connection has to be put down to coincidence. But what's happening on the security personnel front?
A file is being sent over to you from X branch within the next few minutes, sir.
Come in.
Sir?
Oh. Hello, Hudson. Long time no see. Come and take a pew.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Well, that's quite a file you're holding, Sergeant.
It's the complete curriculum vitae. Background, marital status, service record of all the personnel you required, sir.
I see. Trust everyone at X Branch has been discreet in compiling this list?
Well, sir, Superintendent Gray did ask me to tell you that the entire inquiry was given top secrecy, sir.
Good. Hate having to do this, but to apply a virulent poison to the tip of a fine needle or whatever takes a great deal of careful preparation. Now, the Home Office has confirmed that it was the intention to hold a conference with Senator Wiltshire that Wednesday afternoon. It was when they woke up to the fact that it was Derby Day that the meeting was postponed. Now, that means that no one, but no one, other than those responsible for Wiltshire's safety, knew that he was going to be at the races. See now why I took these desperate measures.
Aye, I can, sir.
But time's of the essence, Hudson. You've been attached to X Branch long enough. You read all the information contained in this file?
Yes, sir, I have.
And?
Well, let me put it this way, sir. There's nothing in between those covers that can point to a possible link with the murder.
Yeah, but no one else... Well, I'll be... Sergeant Hudson.
Yes, sir?
Take a good look at me. Do you see any signs of senility? Do my reflexes seem rather slow compared with when we met last?
Well, no, sir.
Then if it's not senility, it's sheer stupidity. Oh, sorry, Hudson. I had the thing topsy-turvy. What a fool I've been. No, wait a minute. This is our province.
Yes, sir?
I want Special Branch. Chief Inspector Davis. Come in.
We've got him under surveillance.
Good. Am I forgiven?
I have done the same myself, given the circumstances. I spoke to Washington this morning. I must say, they were shaken rigid.
Oh, come sit down.
Oh, it seems incredible.
Well, let's not count our chickens yet.
We know that one of them, Geoffrey Holmes, is in the clear, because he went with my Sergeant Nelson to fetch the car that was to take them to the races. Our man says that Holmes never left his side, but literally, not even to get a drink of water. So it has to be...
Excuse me. Yes?
Richard Wallace, Washington on the line, sir.
Oh, thank you. Hello, Mr. Wallace.
Carr, I just don't know what to say to you guys.
Well, Special Branch has told you we just need confirmation as to the information we've got this end. Austin was seconded from the CIA to your organization, is that right?
Yeah,
3 months ago. As you know, it was decided to reduce the strength of the Central Intelligence Agency by 15%. We of the FBI have been under strain for the last 2 years. I just can't believe that a man like Austin could do a thing like that.
When did you assign Austin to the task of...
You're not blaming me, are you? He came to us with 5-star rating. One of my top men fell sick, and so Austin, together with Shaw, got the job.
Fair enough. When he was with the CIA, would Austin have experience...
You're going to ask me whether he'd be capable of this type of assassination? Answer is, yeah, I'm sure he would. But why? Why should he want to kill his fellow countrymen?
Our special branch have found the motive. Before he was voted to the Senate, Mr. Wiltshire was on the bench, was he not?
Yeah, that's right.
I have a copy of the telex you sent to Special Branch. As Judge Wiltshire, the senator, sentenced a certain Benjamin Boston to life imprisonment for murder. He's your man's brother.
Well, I'll be... I'll become...
We've searched Austin's possessions. We know exactly the method he used to kill the senator.
I just don't want to say. This is going to cause a great...
I'm instructed by the Home Secretary to tell you that our authorities are prepared to regard the security house where the senator was staying as diplomatic territory. We are prepared to return Austin to you, providing you provide the armed escort.
I can assure you the President would be extremely grateful if such a procedure was adopted. The less publicity this has, the better. There's been no publicity.
No, sir. As far as the press, radio, and television is concerned, Senator Wiltshire collapsed at the Derby race meeting, and death was immediate. Although nobody said so, it's been taken for granted that the gentleman died as the result of a severe heart attack.
Because the negotiations were secret, everyone will assume that he was an angler just to watch your Derby.
That's about the sum of it, Mr. Wallace.
Where's Austin now?
Oh, he's being kept under surveillance.
He doesn't suspect anything?
No. We got our top men doing the surveying. But, being a trained man, he'll know his room will have been searched as soon as he enters it. Well, sir, what's it to be? Do I quietly charge him with murder, or do we ship him back to the States under armed escort?
Has our ambassador been informed in London?
Well, the Home Secretary went around this morning. It was his suggestion that the killer is shipped back to the States quietly, and that meets with your ambassador's approval.
Okay, that's a deal. And thanks.
Bye. Bye, sir. Well, we'd better give the go-ahead signal, don't you think? Come in.
It's all fixed, sir. He's been handed over together with the gadget.
I've never seen anything like it, sir. Just an ordinary brass ring with about 2 inches of the thinnest needle you ever saw. You can't see it with the naked eye, sir.
Yes, I know. It was the favorite ploy of the early Japanese shogun whenever they decided to get rid of what was one of their favorites. Oh, well, another case closed. What is it, Sergeant?
Well, forgive me, sir. I remember when you suddenly changed your tactics. You said the thing was topsy-turvy.
No, Sergeant, not the thing was topsy-turvy. I got my thinking all wrong. You see... I was sure that it had to be someone in the know, someone who knew that at the last moment the Senator had decided to go to the Derby, and that could only be the Special Branch... and the two escorts from the States. But why topsy-turvy? Because until that moment, I hadn't taken in the information that...
My men were patrolling in front of the stand. The two FBI men were behind them.
We know it had to be one of the security men, but which? One of the Americans, of course. And that man was Austin.
Inspector Carr Investigates, with Hugh Rouse in the title role, is written and produced by Michael Silver. Listen again next Thursday night as Inspector Carr Investigates.